Welcome to Roundtable Talk, a podcast about longevity, senior services marketing, and the quality of life as one ages. Roundtable Talk is brought to you by Pavone Group and Varsity, a senior services agency focused on helping clients win the mature market. If you like the fresh perspectives we deliver in each episode, please give Roundtable Talk a 5-star review on the podcast service of your choice. Hello, everyone, and welcome to another episode of Varsity's Roundtable Talk. My guest today is Dr. Tom Camber, a national leader in aging and technology, and the founder of Older Adults Technology Services and Senior Planet. He's on a mission to help older adults thrive in the digital age through connection, education, and empowerment. Tom, thanks so much for joining us, and welcome to Roundtable Talk.
Thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
So talk a little bit first, before we get going on other topics, about Older Adults Technology Services, or OATS, and Senior Planet. What inspired you to create them?
I started OATS 20 years ago, believe 21 years ago now. It's amazing. I've been a lifelong social activist. I have always done nonprofit or socially meaningful work in my career, and have been fortunate to find some sort of meaningful employment during all those years. Just after 9/11, I was working in Lower Manhattan on a project to help revitalize the community down there. I had an interest in technology and was working on a website to try to get people to come back and use the businesses. And I got approached by an older woman who asked if I would help her learn the internet. And one thing led to another, and she became my sort of volunteer tutoree, and she used to come to my office on Monday mornings and with her breakfast and a napkin, and we would do an hour. And I learned a lot about aging and tech and how different kinds of training and information can really change somebody's life doing that. And I realized there's kind of an open space here in the nonprofit world. So I started OATS, just really starting to teach people around how to use technology. And fast forwarding all these years later, we're a national initiative. We've got 700 sites where people are teaching our programs around the country. We're an affiliate of AARP. I've got 80 staff, so I have to keep a lot of balls in the air. And it's really become a labor of love. We have this amazing mission, and it's evolved a lot. We've changed a lot over the years, but it's really been an exciting mission, an exciting journey for us here.
Well, that's terrific. And I love the genesis story, how it started kind of organically, almost by accident, if you will. But I guess that's the way some of the best ideas kind of take seed, right?
Absolutely. Yeah. So much of this work is nonlinear. You know, you start out with a plan, and then if you're keeping your eyes open, usually it doesn't, the road starts to curve pretty fast, right?
Well said. So Senior Planet offers programs based on 5 impact areas: financial security, social engagement, creative expression, health and wellness, and civic participation. In your mind, are any of those impact areas more important than any of the others?
I think reality-wise, we try to be customer-focused, right? So even though we're a nonprofit, I think we're really animated by the notion of providing real value to people as individuals. And so for many people, the creative expression is the most important thing they're doing. You know, you talk to so many people that have this pent-up desire to be a songwriter or an entrepreneur or whatever it is in their later years, and they come to us with that passion, that idea, and we try to serve them in that area very directly. Now, the most popular topics, clearly social engagement is the one that mostly people, when they say they show up at the door looking for some sort of engagement with us, they're looking to make friends, to make better contact with their friends and family. We talk to a lot of rural people who are in communities where their younger family members may have moved away, and they're, in order to keep the family together, stay engaged, they need that social connection through the technology. So they're learning, Zoom and texting and things like that. We get a lot of fitness and particularly fitness programming. Our number one most popular class is a fitness class. So that's very popular. And then, of course, in terms of changing people's lives, financial security is so important, because if you have your health and you have your finances in order, a lot of other things become possible that way, right? It creates a bridge to a lot of things, the creativity, the civic engagement, if you have a little bit of financial strength there. So those are the ones that come up really prominently. But frankly, for me personally, it's really what the next person who comes through the door is really wanting to do. And that's what we're going to focus on. It's always equally worthy for me.
Interesting. So you mentioned that you've launched it 21 years ago in 2004. How have the missions of Oats and Senior Planet evolved over the years?
Well, there's been a couple of big shifts, really. The very beginning years, we were very focused on digital technology and the learning of the technology. So at that time, when we started, only 26% of older Americans had ever been on the internet, which, you know, in hindsight, you think, you know, how can that, that's such a different time, right? Because today, virtually everybody's been online, right? But we were really starting out originally with, we wanted to harness technology and we wanted specifically to engage people and train them and support them in using technology. The board did a review of the mission about 10 years into the process. And what they found was the passion that we had developed over the first period of our growth had really oriented toward aging. And so if you asked me in maybe 2006 or so what I was working on, I would say, oh, we're a technology nonprofit. If you asked us that question 6 or 8 years later, we would say we're an aging nonprofit. We're really about using technology to change the way we age, because the longevity revolution in America is really this kind of slow moving demographic shift, but it's changing everything. And so we're really excited about that. And we've become more aware of and more committed to our programs and evaluating them and shaping them in a way that's asking, how can we use this technology to help somebody be more successful as an older person, you know, achieve your goals, fit better into your community, and also shape the world around you. So that's been a big change, is from technology to aging. And then I think that the other parts are, we have shifted a little bit and become more committed to the network. I think when we first started out, we were very excited about the mission and the individuals. But as we've partnered over the years, we've realized that there are literally tens of thousands of organizations around the country that are interfacing with older adults around tech, libraries, senior centers, housing, residences, residential communities of various configurations. And a lot of them are the places where our work can most meaningfully take place, but we have to learn to be really smart about partnering. And so we've developed some really sophisticated partnership models over the last 5 years or so, and I think that's really become a big new framework for how we think about the work.
And I'm sure it's really, you know, helped you to reach even more people if you do have these networks to really help you expand at scale.
Absolutely. Yeah, we started out, after we started moving outside of New York City, we wanted to, we were sort of, I have a friend that has, she also runs a nonprofit, and they opened an office outside of New York City in Newark in New Jersey, like right across the river. And she mm-hmm. called me up and she said, we're national. And I remember joking with her about it. But we had the same logic of, you know, we knew there's nothing specific to New York about technology and aging. It just happened to be where we started. So we started doing work outside of the city, and we went to a rural community in upstate New York in Plattsburgh, which is up, you know, the northern part of Lake Champlain there near Canada. And we realized that in rural communities, the work is so powerful, but it doesn't make sense for us to try to do hiring and supervision of staff in all these different locations. So we began experimenting with what we call today Senior Planet licensing, which is a model that allows local partners to use our curriculum and have us help with their training and their support. But they're the ones who are teaching the classes right at the centers. And that simple change in the strategy from us doing everything to us finding some other partner who wants to use their team and their facility to deliver the value that we're bringing, which is really around the content development, the method, and the organizing and the networking, that model has enabled us to go from a handful of sites, maybe 5 different locations, to today we're at 700 locations now in 35 states.
It's wonderful. Yeah. So you'd mentioned, in New York City and then going up to Plattsburgh and now 700 locations. How do you reach seniors in those markets who might be disconnected or isolated? You know, the audience who maybe needs your services the most.
Well, you know, getting started, there's two phases, right? There's getting something off the ground, which requires an enormous amount of outreach. I think people underappreciate just how hard it is to market programs in the social space. You know, you sort of imagine, oh, we're going to come out here and offer this, meals initiative or this social work program, and people are just going to come in and fill the room. And it just doesn't, like everything else you do in modern life, everybody's got competing demands on their time. They have limited awareness in terms of schedules and calendars and things like that. So you have to find people where they are and get to them. So when we start a new program, we do a very intensive press outreach and community outreach. We recently started a program in Miami, just as an example. AARP is our corporate affiliate, and we did a national scan of where we wanted to do our next flagship center. We call them Senior Planet Centers. And when we went to Miami, we found Miami was a great market. It's a lot of older people there, a lot of innovation, a lot of different levels of need and opportunity that people had, and also a lot of visibility. So when we make a difference there, it's visible to people all around the region. So we went to Miami, we picked Wynwood, which is the arts district, and said, this is a place we want to launch a center. We got a lot of raised eyebrows about that one because people said, why the arts district? And we said, you know, this is where a lot of the tourists come, but it's also the center of a lot of the foot traffic in Miami. And it's a place that serves the whole city. It's not seen as captured by one neighborhood. But when we built the center there, it takes a year to build a new center. You know, you get the permitting and the architect, and we did co-design and a lot, and $1 million in launch costs. We hired a PR agency to make sure that we were in all the local newspapers. We did media interviews. We did Spanish media interviews. We did Haitian Creole media interviews. We did direct mail to everyone over the age of 50 in the zip code that we could find. There's a, you know, their, if they have their mailing addresses or on the voter cards, you can reach people. So we did lots of postcards. We went to the local residences and handed out. We actually printed up little tokens because we give out free coffee, and they little wooden tokens that say free cup of coffee and a free computer class. And on the back of it, it said Senior Planet with the address. And we handed them out on the street.
That's
and
had great.
People come in. So that level of outreach is so important to really recruiting people. And we do that everywhere when we start a new initiative. We also support our local partners with flyering and things like that so that they have resources. And then finally, once we're up and running, we find that word of mouth is by far the most powerful tool for people. Once you get 50 people who come in, you're going to get your next 50. You have to continue making sure you give people a great experience. But and once the ball is rolling, it is different. It's about making sure people know when the next classes are and what's, you know, we host like monthly mixers and things like that. But it's that now you've got the people network going, and older people are real good at telling their neighbors and their friends and talking it up around the pool and things like that. So we get a pretty good crowd coming in, but we really work that outreach and recruitment is very important. We sponsor little mini billboards inside of pharmacies where when you're waiting for your medication, it says come to Senior Planet classes. And our programs are free, but even giving away a world-class program for free, you have to get out there and ask people to come. You have to make sure they know what you're doing, where you're doing it, why it's helpful and important to them. We do a lot of work that way.
Sure. And, you know, because it's free, some people might not necessarily perceive the same value as if they had to pay for it. But I think it's great that you are providing it, you know, for no cost.
Yeah, that's the trade-off, right? Like we learned early on that if we charge, certainly the people that pay are going to feel very, you know, passionate, right? They spent their $50 and they want to make mm-hmm. sure that they're getting their value. Problem there is like a lot of people are already traumatized by technology. They've had a hard time. They may have purchased something that didn't work. They may have bought something that they were trying to learn how to use it. People were obnoxious to them. They've had some bad experiences. And then a lot of people are struggling financially to just afford it all. You know, when I was a kid, you didn't have an internet cost per month. You didn't have a Netflix subscription to pay for, plus another, you know, device you have to get and apps you're paying for and all that. So on top of all these other costs, you know, if you come in and say, well, you have to pay for this class, you're immediately excluding the group that's, you know, right on that edge where their limited income or their fixed incomes. And so we decided not to charge. We've never charged. I've got a lot of funders that have given me a hard time about that. I'll go and ask for some resources from a foundation, and they'll say, but you're not charging for your classes. You know, how can you make sure people care about it? But we test Net Promoter Score, which is a corporate satisfaction rating that we ask. So we know that we're really making sure people are getting a good experience for that. And the reality is, you know, we think of the programs as, you know, the most important thing we could provide. We do a lot of design thinking around making sure that it feels like it's a really amazing experience. And people get the message. I'm sure there's a few out there that take us for granted, but we reach a lot more people with the choices that we've made than we would otherwise.
Sure. So Can you share a story that really illustrates the impact of your work? I'm sure you've got dozens, if not hundreds, of stories, but what might one be that really struck you?
The one that pops to mind, I'm sitting here, you can't see over my shoulder here on the side, but there's a plant in my corner here. It's a begonia that I've renamed it Garrison after the guy that gave it to us. He's was a longtime participant at Senior Planet, passed away a few years ago, but he gave me this plant and I use it I keep it here as a reminder by the window that, we had this great experience. Garrison was a Korean. He was born in West Virginia. He remembers when he was a kid that he rode around in a horse and buggy on his family's farm there. And then he went to the Korean, he was in the Korean War, he was a veteran, but he was gay. And he had to grow up in the 1950s as an actor, learning about, how to make his way in the world as a gay man from West Virginia who's in the army and had all that you can imagine what he was dealing with. But he also was this incredible, big-hearted, wonderful guy, creative and inviting. When he found his way to us, he was still acting as a professional. He was in 3 Days of the Condor, that movie with, I guess, Robert Redford was in it. But he was getting gigs as doing TV commercials and short, pieces of acting. The problem is his hearing wasn't very good. And he would try to call up to do the audition, to set up the audition, and he couldn't do the phone calls because, they couldn't hear him. He couldn't hear them. But he realized if he learned email, he could email back and forth and get the work. And so he came to us to learn how to do email. He started getting work again. We became friendly with him. He started coming to a lot of our programs. He was interested in writing. So he started writing he did a blog that we helped him learn how to do the blog. And he became very active with that. And then he moved to Fort Lauderdale, finally retired from acting, but he got into playwriting. And so he was using Senior Planet, which is our sort of framework for classes, as his kind of playwriting universe where he was, learning how to do his work and learning how to use the technology. He won a playwriting competition when he was like 80 years old in Fort Lauderdale. And when he passed away, I was there just a few weeks before he died. I went down to visit him and he was surrounded by good friends. And he was, had kind of come to grips with it. His, life was kind of coming to an end. But he was even then organizing, he organized a family reunion for his nephews that took place after he passed away. But he used the technology to get the invitations out, make sure it was organized well so that people were invited and knew what to do and where to go. And that sense of being part of a community and part of a really active member of his family was activated with this technology. And I think that's a good example of somebody who came to us who he had the sort of professional space, the creative space, the social place in his family. He actually went down to Washington for us and helped advocate for more subsidies for lower income people trying to get the internet. And I remember he spoke in front of Congress and we rode the train back that day because he was on the panel right next to the FCC Commissioner Jenikowski. And he said, Tom, I've had a lot of good days in my life, but he said, this might have been the best.
That's great.
It might have been the best, he was a special guy.
And well, really, I love that. And it just, I think, illustrates how, and I'm certainly not minimizing or taking anything away, but a relatively simple or seemingly simple act of education, teaching how to use email and some of the other means can just really unlock a whole new world for folks.
That's right. The thing that I've really learned from this, which is why I still care so much about the work and feel so lucky to be doing it, is that people are full of this intense potential. And we forget that there's no change in that as we get older. And sometimes I think even as we get older, our potential is still increasing because we've got a better handle on what we're all about, where we're going, what we're capable of. Sometimes we spent our lives, a lot of women I hear this from, they took care of everybody else for, 50 years, right? And then they reach a certain age and they're like, it's finally my time, right? And when you talk to somebody who's in that moment, and they're kind of ready for some real powerful change to do something really cool, we're reaching those people at their best moment. There's an effervescence to it. And I think that the technology is such a tiny piece of it, but it is a little bit like taking the cork out of the bottle sometimes.
Mm-hmm. Yep, indeed. So you mentioned as we get older. So this is a question that I like to ask every guest that we have on Roundtable Talk. What are you looking forward to as you age?
First of all, I'm just looking forward to aging. I'm around a lot of older people. So, I feel like there's a kind of, I'm constantly inspired. So I think I'm looking forward to growing personally. I still have some projects I want to work on. I'm very excited about design. So I spend a lot of time writing and reading about making things. I do a lot of woodworking and working on boats and things. I like to make things beautiful. So as I get older, I'm looking forward to doing more of that, having a little bit more of a chance to be a craftsperson and build some more skills there. And I think my wife is a little bit younger than me. And so she's been kind of every morning I get up and I'm off to work and she like makes me coffee and does stuff. And I've promised her that if I eventually stop going to the office every day, I will be the coffee maker and the meal producer for the house. And I think I'm looking forward to playing that role a little bit in my family, helping to take care of a lot of people that have been kind of nurturing my professional life and me and my full-time schedule. But I feel like I'm going to have more time to be giving back to others.
Sure. Now, do you make a good cup of coffee and are you a good cook? Will she appreciate that? Or do you have some,
that's a very tough question. I used to be the cook and then she's gotten so much better than me, partly because she's just taking a lot of passion for it. She's on Instagram all the time and she gets these recipes and they're like sweet potatoes with, Southwestern chicken recipes or whatever. And I'm like, I would never think about even making this stuff. I am competent in the kitchen. I can execute a recipe pretty well. And I would say I'm good with coffee. Yeah. I can promise a good cup of coffee. You come to my house and I'll take care of you.
Look forward to it. So aging, let's shift to aging and technology. What's the biggest myth about older adults and technology? Lots of stereotypes there.
What's one of the biggest myths? People can't learn, and then that people aren't really capable of learning. That's the part that drives me crazy. You still talk to people out there. I'm sure you know this and hear it all the time, but ageism is one of the last accepted prejudices, where that people just act as if it's normal. There's a million examples of it, but look at the Bill Belichick situation right now. That's the hot one in the newspaper lately, right? He has this much younger partner who, has ruffled people's feathers because she's too visible in the screen when he's doing his work. But a lot of the tenor, whether or not you feel like, that's the right professional role for her, a lot of the backdrop for how people are talking is some sort of outrage that, this older man is somehow not in control because he's with this younger person. There's all this age.
I have found that to be fascinating. You're right.
Present. Yeah, it's really noteworthy how comfortable people are dropping these negative stereotypes about him being feeble. And Bill Belichick might be a lot of things, but he ain't feeble. and this notion that when it comes to technology, that older people are, incapacitated or, can't get it. The problem is it is like a language. It is like a language. And if you are learning a new language, you're going to take, there's a time where you're learning the grammar and you're learning a few of the words and you're getting that you're in first gear, A lot of technology, because of the social networks that older people have, it's not like right in front of them all the time. And so, they may be the later adopters and the family members are acting like somehow there's like a cognitive problem that your mom doesn't know, how to tag something in Instagram. There's nothing wrong with her perception or her knowledge here. It's just that nobody sat down and given her the same time to learn it that you already had a year or two ago. So that impatience that people have, I think that's the misconception, is that somehow there's something wrong when in fact it's just that your kid is acting like a jerk and they should like think a little bit about the social dynamics for how they're interacting with older people and learn to appreciate that, to overcome some of that stereotype that they have.
That's a great point. So to me, and I've heard this time and again over the last, months or in a year or two, it seems as if older adults adopted technology at a much faster pace and much more completely, if you will, throughout the pandemic. After all, for many, it was the only way to communicate with friends and relatives. Would you agree?
Absolutely. The pandemic on a technology side was a game changer. We were just before the pandemic, we already had they call it a learning management system, which is a technology platform for the training and educational programming that we do. And we created a version of a learning management system here at Oats to deliver our trainings online back in 2018. And we were doing like small levels of it, you know, trying to get people to learn with through the computer. But, you know, Zoom happened just around the same time that the pandemic happened. And imagine those two pieces coming together where people desperately needed what Zoom had to offer. The connectivity was incredibly powerful. The AARP did some research that consumer purchasing of technology among the 50 plus skyrocketed during that period. Problem was that, again, it's not 100%, and it was not even. So first of all, there's places all over the country that don't have access to wireline internet at home and that don't have access. You know, they maybe have satellite, you know, or they have very expensive or very limited choices. And so a lot of older people were ready to adopt, but if you don't have it, you can't adopt it, right? And then there were people that couldn't afford it. And so you had people that struggled financially. We just did some research recently, back during the pandemic, about 42% of older people over the age of 65 did not have wireline internet at home. Today, the number's a little better. It's about 32%, but you're still talking 1 in 3. And the gap of people that don't have wireline is partly made up by people that are using cellular or satellite. But again, remember, those are not universally an alternative for regular broadband. Like broadband wireless, you know, direct, you know, wireline communication is the gold standard for speed and connectivity. And then you can add satellite and add the cellular on top of that, which we do recommend people consider or have those choices. But you got big gaps out there. And the problem with that, of course, is that that gap meant that people who couldn't get online, which were disproportionately older adults, were at risk of contracting COVID because they had to go places in person, right? If you're the average 30-year-old could go to the supermarket or they could order through, you know, through Grubhub, right? But if you don't have internet and you don't have those tools, you have to go to the supermarket, which is putting your life at risk for many people. So
that's exactly right.
We really felt that, you know, a lot of people adopted, but that group that didn't or couldn't was even more at risk.
So how do you design tech programs or training and those sorts of things that resonate with older adults?
I think you have to take that's an area where we really have grown to develop some real passion and capability. When I first started doing classes, you know, we thought, let's just make a curriculum, right? But the first thing we found was that people were already learning. There were curriculum out there that people were using in senior programs, but it wasn't really designed by older people. And you could tell, like, you know, how many classes they would do, maybe 4 sessions of 3 hours apiece. 3 hours. And of course, you know, I don't know if you could sit through a 3-hour class. I certainly can't. And we found that for the amount of information people were absorbing, they were getting overwhelmed and the curriculum wasn't relevant. You know, they were talking about the technology itself. Nobody really cares about the parts of the computer, what they're called.
Right.
You know, they want to know, like, you need to know what a mouse is, right? But you don't need to know what a CPU stands for, right? And they weren't telling people, helping people get online with getting email, which is what people want. And they weren't helping people with content that's relevant around social connections or, you know, managing their financial stuff. And so I sat down with a group of people in Bedford-Stuyvesant. I remember the tenants association leaders. You'll appreciate that because a lot of your listeners are housing folks. And this, you know, the leader, her name was Charlotte Rogers. It was at the Betty Shabazz complex on Gates Avenue. And I said, what do you want to learn? And how do you want to learn it? And they said, we want to learn internet. We want to learn email. We want to do it in short sessions. And we want to meet twice a week because we forget stuff if we just get one class and then we have to come back 7 days later. So we reorganized the curriculum. So you meet Monday and Wednesday for 1 hour and 15 minutes. Started with the internet the first class, got to email in the fourth class. People were already learning and getting comfortable, getting safe and doing that work. And that program, because it was what today we would call co-design, but back then it was just asking questions before you wrote the curriculum and working with people, it turned out to be very, very responsive and very adapted to what people's needs were. And then around that, we've also started to realize, I feel very passionately about this, you know, often we underfund or underinvest in programs for older people as if somehow it's good, you know, that they should feel lucky that they're getting a sandwich for lunch. And that infuriates me because, you know, everyone who comes to these programs has contributed something to the society. Many of them have paid, you know, enormous amounts of taxes and contributions, and they've been community leaders, and they've raised families, and they've been the people out mowing lawns and doing civics associations and things. And it's time for people to get a program, a service, an initiative, and you know, they're sitting on a plastic folding chair gluing macaroni onto a styrofoam cup, you know, and it feels like it's not at the level that a lot of people are ready to operate. And so when we started designing programs at Senior Planet, first of all, we renamed our program, instead of being Oats, which is my nonprofit's name, we called the program Senior Planet because the brand was more aspirational. We could do more with the visuals. We could take pictures of older people doing cool stuff and share that. And then when we built our centers, we got an architect who designs high-end restaurants and hotel lobbies in New York, and we brought him in there and sat him down next to older folks that were going to take the classes and said, what do you want? How should we build the space out? What are we going to do? What colors do you want? How big should the training room be? All these weird little things like how you organize the chairs in the training space, but each little piece fits together. And, you know, we paid extra to have nice millwork made with teak on the walls. And we just did a space in Miami that looks like a, you know, Miami Beach, kind of a temple of awesomeness. It's just absolutely fantastic. It's been on the media now and people keep going. If you walk by that place, you wouldn't think, oh, here's a little, you know, publicly funded community center, which is not to criticize, but you think like, this is a place I want to go hang out. It's like a club. It's like a social club for cool people. It just happens to be free. It happens to be supported by the local government, by partnerships, by AARP, and by foundations. And it happens to be mostly populated by people in their 70s, which is awesome.
And that's really how we think
about that design thing. You have to design at the level that people are at. And that's a way of fighting ageism. Mm-hmm. You know, the great design is an antidote to ageism.
Absolutely. Now, are there specific areas like telehealth, online banking, or social media that are more important or require more education for older adults?
I think security and safety are really critical here. And I hate to say that because sometimes it creates a negative kind of overlay for people where somehow, we're concerned that, identity theft and scams and fraud. And so that's already a barrier. And then you're going to adopt technology and it makes people anxious, which we're trying not to do. But I do think that when we train and when we create these programs, we need to kind of knit in or weave in content that makes sure that people are staying safe and they're protected. And the reason for that is that, first of all, scams and fraud disproportionately target older people. And we just did a series here at Oats. We interviewed 10 gerontologists around the country, asking them about technology, how they thought the trends were going, what to focus on. And the number one topic people said that we really needed to make sure we were focusing on was scams. And not out of some kind of stereotype or preconception, but because these people are on the front line working with older people and a lot of people are getting ripped off. They really are. And it's really a problem. So we have to make sure people are like really inoculated against that stuff. And the technology is the tool because the scams aren't going to go away. But if we get better at managing, AI and managing our, what we're looking at on our phones and Oats has a hotline for people that are calling if they have a question and want to be able to check for whether or not there's a scam. We have to make sure that we're protecting ourselves. So that's the number one thing that we have to make sure is front and center. And then the other piece is, we're really interested in making sure people have kind of state-of-the-art, up-to-date tech. So our current, I was just looking at it today, we're looking at our numbers from our classes. The number one class this month at Oats is Introduction to AI. Because it's hot. Everybody's like, it's shaping the world and everybody wants to be on top of that. So you have to make sure that we're covering the current themes that people are interested in. Our number one YouTube video on the Senior Planet YouTube sequence is how to take scans of documents on your iPhone. And it's kind of a little bit of an advanced thing. Because people need that practical skill to be able to manage their information, their documents. People are really interested in digital vaults now. ARP has a digital vault for new members. We think that stuff is super powerful. So we're looking to get people to think about not just get email and learn how to get on the internet. But hey, we got to stay right up to speed with what everybody else is doing around us so that, we're kind of in the mainstream.
Sure, sure. So you mentioned AI and another technology that, certainly in the conversation, perhaps more so in the last couple of years, but a smart home technology. How's AI and how is smart home technology changing the landscape of aging?
Well, you're talking about two different kind of arcs of innovation here, right? So smart home technology, as I perceive it, is on the sort of maturation side of the developmental arc, right? Because 10 years ago, everybody's talking about smart homes and we were all trying to implement it and it wasn't quite there yet.
Right.
But now everybody's got a Ring doorbell and everybody's got, you know, some sensor doing something in their house. I have a water sensor sitting in my garage that if there's a flood, it's going to ring my phone while I'm talking to you. You know, there's that kind of element to things. I think that smart home technology and also voice activation for people that like voice activation, extremely powerful tech, that's really helping a lot of people. Security and safety things. It's just really the whole smart home dynamic. Samsung has a new thing on this care hub they're working with, which I think is exciting. So I think smart home technology is at a place now where it works. It's a question of what kind of platform you want to really sort of create as your basic platform. Are you going to be a Google or a Amazon or you know, different sort of central tech that you're using, and then what your priorities are for applying across that. We have a yard with a garden, so we do a lot of, in our smart home, we've got everything on sensors for the sprinkler system, you know, which is like the bane of my existence every year because I have to deal with it. But so I think what's exciting about that is that older people are enjoying their homes more. You know, Americans don't move as much as we used to. And so being able to age in place or being able to age in a community where you move into it, I mean, even if it's your residential community, I was in Lancaster, Pennsylvania, and a gentleman said, aging in place is for dummies. This is a community. I want to age here. And he was really excited about it. But the smart home technology is helping people feel like those homes that they're now growing older in are more exciting for them. They're getting the integration of the entertainment and the productivity and the security and safety and the monitoring, all that stuff together. AI is in a different phase. I don't know if you've heard that, you know, Gartner has this what they call the hype cycle with technology, and technology tends to have this huge, very steep early arc of excitement. You know, everybody's like, oh my god, you know, self-driving cars, this is going to be amazing. And then invariably there's a disappointment phase where people realize it doesn't do what they hoped it would do as quickly as they thought it was going to, and everybody's mad about it. And then it kind of troughs out, and then it recovers, and then hits what they call the productivity plateau. I think smart homes is at the productivity plateau stage now. AI is at the about to crash, where people are so excited about it that it can't possibly live up to that expectation. And so we're having to manage the excitement, and people are learning about it, and they're learning how to take advantage of it for writing legal documents and drafting up their, you know, emails to people. And I just used it for making a party invitation the other day. There's a million different things you can do. We just did a research project here. The principal things older people are using AI for are research and learning, principally about things, and then writing for a lot of people. They need it for help in writing. But there's going to be a crash. And then the big change is going to be AI is going to change robotics. And it's really shortening the timeline for robotics. So robotics, which were up until recently a 10 or 15 year horizon into the future, are now more like a 5 to a 10 year horizon into the future. That's going to change people's home environments.
Sure. So how does technology support healthy aging beyond just convenience?
There's a few things. I mean, I think healthy aging for people, I think I mentioned earlier, you know, we run programs on our website called Senior Planet, seniorplanet.org, right? So every single day we run multiple classes. We do about 4,700 classes a year. The number one class by a mile is called Morning Stretch. So the average oats class gets maybe like 25, 50 people, maybe 75 for a session. Morning Stretch every day, 5 days a week, gets like 500 or 600 people. And the if I told you 5 years ago that we would have 600 older people doing Zoom fitness programs together, and then afterwards we leave the Zoom open and they all like celebrate birthdays and talk to each other.
That's great.
The healthy aging part of this is the socialization of their physical activity, the socialization of their communication around their health, around their sharing of tips and their diet and things like that. They're doing that through technology channels constantly, and it's really unleashed an opportunity for people to think about their health in a social context. So it's no longer, you know, I think his name was it Bill Rogers, the runner who was like out running marathons by himself back in the 70s? You know, it was like an isolated thing you did by yourself, you know, and I think the aerobics world has started to create the social class now, but people are now doing this stuff online. Peloton is a real popular program for people that do that. We've got people using fitness trackers now that are super, super popular. And then things like Instagram, you know, there's Train with Joan, the woman in Cancun that's got a million followers and she's in her 70s doing fitness. Senior Planet sponsored athletes. We have 5 athletes that share their fitness journeys online, and people are actually learning about how people are swimming and running and walking and caring for themselves physically as we get older. So I think there's more resources that people are taking advantage of. I think the gerontologist we talked to said that people are now really coming to their medical appointments with better information. We've got lots of people using telemedicine, which is a huge benefit for people in rural communities. It's a big plus. It's really mm-hmm. a big plus.
Sure. So what structural or policy barriers still prevent many older adults from getting online?
Well, the big ones are clearly the telecommunications reform that we need to do in this country. I think we're at a kind of a loggerheads or logjam here where people are, you know, we know that everybody needs internet. It's not really a luxury anymore. It's not, shouldn't really be a choice. It's kind of like water and electricity. And the phone system was the original kind of plan for how to make sure that everybody had universal phone service. They called it the Universal Service Fund, right? Universal Service Fund, it only applies to phone lines, and it hasn't yet been updated to apply to the internet. And everybody knows we need to do that. AARP has been active in supporting the extension of, you know, support for lower income people through the subsidy programs, affordable connectivity program, and things like that. I think the policy side here, first of all, is just make sure everybody has connectivity. You know, even if you live in a very remote area or you're lower income, let's extend that phone system logic we had to make sure everybody's online. That's number one. And then two is empowering the service providers and the people that are at those community organizations to use technology to do a better job serving older people. It needs to be a net plus. So when you go to get your veterans service, you know, care, or when you go to get your senior center program, or when you go to the local library, you should notice that you have a better experience because of the technology. That needs to be government like policy to make sure that we're really, you know, being more efficient, being more responsive, getting people what they want in a higher level of service. DMV has been improving. There's a lot of things where you can see that the government's starting to get it. And then the last part is the regulatory side, just protecting people from the negative downsides of some of this stuff, which are definitely a problem. So protecting people from scams and increasing penalties for people that are defrauding or preying on older people. Making sure that insurance companies are following some legitimate, reasonable guidelines around how they're processing claims. We can't end up in a world where AI becomes an excuse for not giving people the insurance benefits that they have been paying for and they're eligible for. That's an area of concern that people have.
Well said.
And then making sure that we have legitimate regulatory protections on things like pharmaceuticals and other entity, you know, other services that are out here, many of which are mediated by technology. AARP is super active on this stuff. I always defer to them because they have a really strong team of people who know what they're talking about, but there's an agenda here.
Sure. That's great. So how can senior living communities play a more active role in supporting technology education and digital literacy for their residents?
I mean, I think first of all, they should talk about it, you know, as transparently as possible. I think I visited quite a few communities that have, you know, great robust technology programs where they've got trainings and they've got a tech lab somewhere in this on site. They've got a, you know, tech support person who's help you out in the apartment. They've got, you know, menus that are available on touch screens inside people's rooms and things like that. I think that all of that stuff is really powerful and important. I do think, however, that we need to raise the bar a little bit sometimes. People, you know, think that like, oh, we bought a few computers a few years ago, so we, you know, so we're technology enabled, and you can't get stuck in it, you know, and you just because you check the box and say it's like tech enabled, there's real different levels of how professional, how integrated it is. So I think people need to be able to continue to evolve with the technology and not necessarily get locked into a large unwieldy system that may be getting outdated with a lot of, you know, older mainframe style hardware. I do see that sometimes with some of the, you know, communities we've talked to that'll say, you know, we invested all this money in our, you know, this digital communication system, which is now outdated because everybody's on their smartphones all the time and we don't have an app. So being able to stay agile is really important. And I think the other pieces are, I think the senior living communities benefit from partnering with community organizations around this. We, you know, Oats works with 700 partners around the country now where they license our curriculum. You get your libraries, your senior centers, your service agencies, all around. Senior communities can actively work with those entities and say, let's co-host a technology program here. Let's use it. And it should usually be for a purpose. It's a tech program for creativity or a tech program for people that are, you know, looking to be more physically fit or physically active, but they're using tech as a way to instigate it. So I think those partnerships have a real upside for people. And I've talked to a lot of residential directors in different communities who say, you know, if we had more time, we would do more of this.
Sure, sure. So what are some of the most effective ways that you've seen retirement communities introducing tech, or that they could introduce tech, you know, like telehealth, smart home, devices, online learning, you know, any of those kinds of areas without overwhelming residents?
Yeah, I think part of it is getting people, I actually think the senior communities may actually become, may not realize it, but they're a little bit the vanguard on some of this, because as they adopt some of these technology choices, somebody has to narrow down the choices, right? One of the things with smart home is that there's too many options. And so people are saying, you know, I'm overwhelmed. You go to Best Buy and it's like there's just, you know, shelf after shelf after shelf of things, and you don't really know, like, do I need all this? Which do I choose?
And so, and when will it be outdated?
Yeah, yeah. And the senior communities are in the place where they can say, listen, let's get everybody on this platform. We're all going to use Amazon Alexa. Let's do it. Let's create a, you know, you can teach it a, you know, skill and certain things, so people can get the menus or the, you know, responding to understanding some of the residential policies or different things that they're working with. And so I think the adoption of some of the tech already is putting a stake in the ground, saying at least we're going to bundle people's experience with technology into a more narrow framework, a more manageable and digestible framework for people. So that's really important. I think I spoke to a gentleman in North Carolina who's using robots in the lunchroom. They're sending robotic carts around that are, you know, bringing people their food and clearing plates and things. Just the sense of the innovation that comes from that, and the sense that the future is already here and that we're working with it, is creating a pro-technology attitude among people. There's quite a lot of research that shows if you talk about technology and talk about aging in positive terms, people are much more likely to adopt it and work well with it than if you kind of frame it or introduce it with negative expectations that it's going to be a problem. And so being more positive about it and being excited about trying things and then letting go of things that aren't working without undue storm and drong, I think, around it is probably a good role for the communities to be playing right now.
That's great. Well, Dr. Camber, I've really enjoyed our conversation. I do have one last question that I'd like to pose. What have you learned that you wish you could have told your younger self?
Oh, gosh. That I'm going to be okay. You know, when I was younger, when I was in my teens, I spent the first, the first part of my life I spent not knowing I was always worried I wasn't going to make it. You know, my parents were like, you're moving to New York. You know, if you make it in New York, you can make it anywhere. It's a sense of like, are you going to make it? You know, and I have daughters now, and I've been encouraging them to try things, and they say like, oh, what if it doesn't work? And I've got this new job and am I good enough and whatever. And I say, it's going to be fine. There's so many paths to being okay. And if you're patient and you're persistent and you're a person with integrity, you don't have to be the most talented, the smartest, the richest, the best looking, the tallest. Show up with integrity, be patient, keep at it, and you're going to end up in a good place. And I think I didn't know that. I didn't appreciate how often that seems to happen for people. And I worried too much. I would just tell myself, just relax. It's going to be fine. Take your foot off the gas a little bit. I would have loved to know that a little earlier.
That's right. Well, wise words. Again, thank you, Dr. Camber, founder of Older Adults Technology Services and Senior Planet. Really appreciate your joining us today and spending this time with me.
Thanks for having me. I've really enjoyed the conversation.
And thank you also to Dave Schaffner, our producer, and Matt Campbell, our engineer, and we'll see you next time on Roundtable Talk.